This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with ESPN's Matt Barry in a little bit, who was on site to cover the PGA Championship, as were we all week long, ending with the Phil Mickelson historic victory yesterday. And in a moment, I'll tell you why that was obviously great for Phil. It was historic, but it was also good for the game. It was good for the fans. It was good for athletes of a similar age. Get to that in just a moment. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or find us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915, they were founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more info, or to check out their incredible history, or to see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. Well, it was a lot of fun being out there the past 5 days at Kiawa to cover the PGA Championship, which ended with the dramatic and historic win for Phil Mickelson yesterday at the age of 50. And what an accomplishment for Phil, to be the lowest-ranked player to win a major in 18 years, ranked 115th in the world entering the week, and to do something that no one has ever done, winning a major at the age of 50. The previous three golfers that were 50 years or older that led a major heading into Sunday all lost, and Phil had that reputation of doing the same. The last two times he led after 54 holes at a major, he lost. The last five times he led any golf event after 54 holes, he had lost. It had been over a decade since he went into a Sunday with a lead and held on for the win. So it was historic, it was dramatic, it was great. It was the icing on the cake of a fantastic career for Phil. It also gave older athletes hope, not only in the golf world, but in all sports, where you see Tom Brady winning at 43, most recently in the NFL, LeBron James most recently in the NBA at 35, and now Mickelson in the golf world at 50. It was obviously great for the sport, with the attention it brought yesterday, and it was great to see all the sports fans out there following him on the 18th and crowding around and going crazy at Kiawa as Mickelson finished off the dramatic win. And joining us now is somebody who was part of the coverage all week long for ESPN, very familiar with South Carolina as well. It's Matt Barry, who you can find on Twitter at Matt Barry. Watch him each day on ESPN on SportsCenter, and he's with us now. Matt, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Good being with you guys. A little tired from the week at Kiawa, being back at work, but it's well worth the lack of sleep to be a part of history.
I could imagine. Now, are you already back up in Northeast, or are you still in the area?
I just got off air on SportsCenter. We flew in late last night to be back today, so it was a long day followed by a late night, but I am back in the lovely Northeast.
Well, you were part of the coverage all week long. You were here for it with the Mickelson win yesterday. We were there on site for the coverage, but couldn't get close, obviously, to what Mickelson was doing on the 18th. We were somewhere else. What was it like to be part of the coverage, the broadcast, to be there on site as Mickelson pulled that off yesterday?
It was kind of the unofficial welcome back to sports moment. You know, there's going to be, you know, detractors, obviously, with the discussion of COVID and everything that goes around it. But the fact that we were able to witness that type of history with fans in attendance, maybe a little too close to the players at some point, but to see something that was very reminiscent of what we saw in 2018 with Tiger winning the Tour Championship at Eastlake, it was just a moment that I don't think I'll ever forget because of what Phil's meant to the sport and how he took down a giant in Brooks Koepka. And how he did it in a place that was just eating players alive all week. It was just an iconic moment. I think you're going to see that video for the rest of golf time when it relates to Phil Mickelson in that 9-iron that he hit, started celebrating when it hit the 9-iron because he knew that sealed it. just an incredible moment. And look, I'll say this. You had mentioned, I, knowing South Carolina, used to work in Columbia, used to go to Charleston all the time. What a great week for the city of Charleston, for Kiawah Island, and those passionate golf fans to be able to be a part of that type of history.
Yeah, certainly. And I want to follow up on that, but first to ask you about Phil. You know, he played great really all weekend, got off to a little bit of a slow start, but then turned it on heading into the Saturday and Sunday. And throughout all of it, I think golf fans were kind of waiting for that, and just sports fans were waiting for that other shoe to drop, because we know about Phil's experience or even reputation. So much so that, I mean, Vegas didn't have him the favorite on Saturday. I think even going into Sunday, I don't think he was the favorite going into Sunday, even though he was in the lead. So for you, covering the event, watching it, you know, at what point did you feel like Phil has this? Was there a point this weekend where you knew he was locked in, he's actually going to do this at 50 years old?
It's a really good question, because I'm also an Arizona State guy. So, the connection with Phil runs back to being a Sun Devil, and I've always been one of those that is rooted for Phil and kind of taking on those career highs and lows as being a Phil fan. And I don't think any of us, even we were talking off camera, none of us would say it on air, but off camera, we were just talking about, like, can Phil sit on this lead? Remember, he took the lead on Friday, so the discussion amongst us was, can he hold on to that lead all through Saturday? And I'll tell you, Tim, man, none of us thought it was possible, just because we thought maybe it was just another good round like he had at Quail Hollow moving on. And then he obviously did that on Saturday. So then the next question is, can he really do this on Sunday? And when you're going up against a robot and a machine like Brooks Koepka, you know, the odds there are long. But from what I had seen out of Phil's swing throughout the week, this guy made a career out of missing fairways. He only had a couple of those instances over the course of the week. He just looked like he was swinging it differently. And I think once he battled a couple of blows from Brooks when he holed out the chip on 5, and you knew that he was game to go back and forth with Koepka, I think we started to believe, once he started making that back 9 turn, hearing the conversations he was having throughout the tournament with his brother and caddy Tim, you started feeling good about how Phil felt. Now, there was one last moment of holding your breath, was on the par 3 17th, when he hit a pure shot. It was a good golf shot. He's had too much adrenaline. Probably could have gotten away with a 7-iron there, but he hit too much and it rolled back into that heavy stuff. I think once I saw that, once I saw him play it smart, understand that he was going to make bogey and move on, I was pretty certain that we were going to witness history, that Phil was going to get this done.
Talking with ESPN's Matt Barry, who was part of the extensive coverage of the PGA Championship for ESPN the past couple of days here from Kiawah. Brooks Koepka never really provided that battle we thought we were going to get coming down the home stretch yesterday between he and Mickelson. How big of a role do you think the knee played in? You know, first time he's played 4 rounds since the knee surgery. He talked afterwards about the crowd on the 18th going after his knee. How big of a role did you think the knee may have played for Brooks yesterday?
Very little. If the knee was going to play a factor, you would have seen it off the tee. You would have seen it in other shots. You just didn't see it. It was the putting. And Brooks would be the first to tell you, is his putting was not Brooks Koepka's standard in a major championship. And so while the knee was, it's not that it wasn't in pain, it just didn't impede him hitting the golf ball. And so I think a lot of it came down to his lack of being able to make the big putt. I think anyone who covers golf and watches golf probably felt that Brooks was going to go into Sunday and do what he typically does. But once he started missing putts, you start knowing the magic is gone. It's similar to that of Jordan Spieth and even Louis Oosthuizen when he was making his run up the leaderboard. When he stopped making putts, the magic went away. And so I think because they were trading so many blows early on and then still kept executing and Brooks kept missing putts, I think that was a bigger issue than the knee.
I know you've been debating this with many online, but Phil's win yesterday, is it in the same ballpark as Tiger a couple years ago? Is it apples, oranges? How do you view those two events against one another?
I have been battling people online, and I don't know why we can't separate the difference between the two. And I ranked them today on SportsCenter when Sage Steele and I were talking. I have Tiger in terms of older wins by legends of the game. And obviously, I'm 42, so I'm more recency biased, but I put Tiger 19 at the Masters number one. And the reason that that's at number one, when you consider how many back surgeries he had to even be able to walk, forget playing golf, actually walk. So that's part one of that. Part two, he obviously had the reconstructive surgery on his knee after winning the U.S. Open and being Rocco Mediate. But he had all of these injuries to where he was a shell of himself as an athlete and as someone who could even get around his house. And so put that all into perspective. He was written off, so he wins the Masters. And this hasn't been talked about a lot, which is why I rank it behind Phil or rank Phil behind Tiger. Phil's never had that major injury. He's been healthy his entire career. He had a little bit of an arthritis issue, but he hasn't had these surgeries, much less multiple surgeries. And so just from the injury component with Tiger to Phil makes it different. So I'd put Phil 2, and then I'd put Jack, 86 Masters, 46 years old. I'd put that third. But between our icons of our era, Tiger 19, Phil, and then Jack.
Yeah, I do agree with you in that ranking or that ordering of those three events. Talking with Matt Berry from ESPN. All right, so you did mention, you know, the atmosphere, the environment, the host of the Ocean Course at Kiawah. I know Gary Williams over the weekend said that the Ocean Course is a likely favorite for the 2030 PGA Championship and the 2041 Ryder Cup. It's hard to get these events. You know, the Ryder Cup, the next available one in the States, isn't for another 20 years. But from your experience covering this thing at the Ocean Course, you know, what did you think about how the Ocean Course handled this event and maybe the role it should play in future big events in the golf world moving forward?
I think it's a great major event location. We saw the Ryder Cup 91, 2012 PGA Championship, and then this year. I think it's just such a good test of golf. The design, Pete Dye, Alice Dye, is perfect. But what I love about it is that the design is one part, the natural elements are the second part. And anytime you combine the two, I just think it sets up for a good atmosphere for a big-time golf championship. The town or the island of Kiawah does a phenomenal job with how they bus people in, so traffic's not really an issue. And it's so scenic, and it's just so remote. And there's something charming about a course that you almost have to work to get to. And I would love to see Kiawah Island and the Ocean Course routinely be in the conversation, just because from top to bottom, to how the event is run, to how the proximity to Charleston, which is one of the great cities in our country, the proximity to all of that, I think makes for a really, really enticing and good event.
Yeah, certainly. And I think it showed out well over the past couple of days. He's Matt Berry from ESPN on Twitter at Matt Berry. Watch him on SportsCenter each day. And he was part of the coverage of the PGA Championship the last couple of days. Matt, appreciate the time. Go grab yourself a nap now, but appreciate you taking the time today to come on as well.
Hey, anytime. Thank you for the hospitality this week, and I look forward to a trip to Charleston soon.
Matt Berry from ESPN, appreciate the time from him. Right off the set of SportsCenter, and coming on with us today after flying back from South Carolina last night, so it's been a hectic week for him. You know, I can't compare. We didn't get on a flight. I don't want to make it about me. It was a busy week for us, but when you cover an event like that as well, I mean, you look forward to it. You welcome it. When you get to cover the PGA Championship out on Kiawah, and they did a great job in that area, and we were at Freshfields Village. We weren't on the 18th like Matt Berry or some of the guys from ESPN, the mothership, but just to be out there at Freshfields, they took great care of us, and it was a lot of fun. Appreciate the time from Matt talking about the PGA Championship. You can find him on Twitter, at Matt Berry. Or watch him on TV, although I think he's on the same time as us, right? He's on 12 to 2. He just got off the set of SportsCenter. So you know what? You can watch him on mute if you want and listen to the show here, which you can do from anywhere in the world. You can stream the Morrow Midday Show online at charlestonsportsradio.com through your smart speaker now or even through the free TuneIn Radio app. Yesterday was an historic win for Phil Mickelson. I was getting into this when Matt first joined us. But obviously, for the obvious reasons we've laid out, for Phil, it was an iconic victory. We've never seen anybody of that age pull that off. It was great for the game of golf, that as they try to figure out potentially life after Tiger, waiting for that next star to step up. In the long term, it's not going to be Phil. We know that. He's already 50, and as he said yesterday, I may not win again. Right, we didn't even think yesterday was going to happen. So you can't count on Phil Mickelson. But to see the scene, and I'll be waiting for the official ratings because there was a lot going on in the sports world this weekend. It was a busy and really good weekend of sports. And yet, just based off of the early numbers or impressions, it looked like golf yesterday beat out all else. So it was great for the game of golf because you wouldn't get that same atmosphere or discussion or viewership if it was pretty much any other golfer, other than maybe Brooks, maybe Bryson DeChambeau could get you into, you know, get you to tune in on a Sunday, a late Sunday, to see how it finishes. But especially Mickelson, with all the fans on the 18th following Phil around, all the thumbs up he gave, you wouldn't get that yesterday. You wouldn't get that scene on the 18th tee, or on the 18th green, I should say, if Mickelson was not involved in one way or the other. So it was great for the game of golf that in this major, with fans back on the course and shortly after the Tiger Woods accident, that they have all this buzz with Phil Mickelson. They still need to find somebody else, whether that's a Koepka, a DeChambeau, a Zalatoris, Morikawa, somebody that will pick up the slack moving forward, because you can't count on Mickelson much longer either. But for the day, for the week, yesterday, that was great for the golf world. It was great for the sports fans, because I think yesterday is a day that we will look back on as kind of the start, I guess, of getting back to normal from the sports perspective throughout this pandemic. And we've always looked at this pandemic through that sports lens. I mean, go back to when the world shut down. It was after the NBA and Rudy Gobert had their positive test. And then we've kind of taken our cues from the sports world. Like, well, you know, this team, they're having 100% capacity, so we should be able to go to the movie theater and go to, you know, we've taken the lead almost from the sports teams and what they are doing and how they're setting the standard. And you see, well, that team, you know, they have 75%, so it must be safe to gather. I don't need to wear my mask anymore. They're not requiring your mask at the baseball game. Stuff like that. Why do I have to wear my mask outdoors? I don't have to wear it at the game. The sports have kind of set a lot of the standards through all this. And so to see yesterday what was going on at the Ocean Course, and then to see even last night if you were watching the NBA, and to see Madison Square Garden alive and well with tons of, with 15,000 in there going crazy, and it felt like, you know, 2019 again for the first time. In a long time, for the first time in a year and a half. And lastly, the win for Mickelson yesterday was not only great for him, I mean, he made history, not only great for the game of golf, they had a big day yesterday, not only great for sports fans to see that maybe we are getting back to normal, but also great for the older athletes, because I mentioned this again before Matt Berry joined us. But prior to COVID, the most recent champions were Patrick Mahomes at 24, Kawhi Leonard at 27, Colin Morikawa at 23, and during COVID, we've had Tom Brady at 43 win a Super Bowl, LeBron James at 35 win an NBA championship, Phil Mickelson at 50 win the PGA championship. And when the going gets tough, sometimes you have to lean into that experience to figure things out, to make things work, to deal with the adversity. And maybe that's the case for Brady, for LeBron James, and in this case, Phil Mickelson as well. Brooks Koepka coming off a knee issue. No Tiger Woods, right? The unusual scheduling of these things and the way that the golf world has been disrupted the last 12 months. And even though he had been struggling, Phil Mickelson came through. And I think in regards to this particular event, his experience definitely played a big factor when you talk about maybe the toughest course they have on the tour, you know, that's used. And Mickelson, the oldest man, was the one that came out victorious. The younger golfers, a lot of them struggled. Brooks Koepka yesterday really struggled, didn't make any adjustments, and was not there at the end to be in the running with Mickelson. An historic win yesterday. It was great to be out there. It was great to bring coverage all week long of the Mickelson victory and the PGA Championship, and a lot of fun over at Freshfields Village on Kiawah Island. Appreciate their hospitality for hosting us all week, for feeding us all week, for taking care of us, for making sure we were good. They checked in on us multiple times a day. You good? Everything's good over here? You need anything? Great people. Great setup over there. It was a lot of fun. And that's just the icing right on top. That's the cherry on top. To not only have a great week, a great event, good weather, fans back, fun times, restaurants flourishing in the area, which we need, but also for Phil Mickelson, of all golfers, for Phil to be the winner. The fan favorite, the 50-year-old who hadn't won in almost a decade, made for a great week out on Kiawah. When we come back, we will hear from Phil Mickelson himself. Plus, coming up, who would you rather have coaching in the SEC? Who are the best football coaches in the SEC? Because a debate broke out over the past week, and I apparently am in the minority. We'll get to that coming up as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Home, gotta call me on the yacht. 10 years from now, we'll still be on top. Yo, I thought I told you that we won't stop. Now, what you gonna do when it's cool? I got money, my
much longer than yours. And a team much stronger than yours. Violate me, this will be your day. We don't play, mess around, be DOA. Be on your way, cause it ain't enough time here. Ain't enough lime here for you to shine here. Deal with many women, but treat down fair. And I'm bigger than the city lights down in Times Square. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Coming up, Phil Mickelson with the historic victory yesterday. We'll hear from the winner himself. Plus, which coaches would you prefer to have coaching your football team in the SEC? We'll get to that coming up here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I haven't heard anything, so I'm trying to look online to see. I'll get this information in just a moment about our summer golf tour. Yeah, it is already sold out. Okay, nobody told me this morning, but I figured because the first 2 weeks sold out in less than 20 minutes, and it looks like week three has sold out as well. This week was Dunes West. Went on sale this morning at 8 a.m., but that too has sold out. No surprise there. It took 17 minutes week one, 18 minutes week two. Maybe you had 19 minutes this morning. But Dunes West sold out, so you have to wait till next Monday, a week from today, the 31st, which is Memorial Day, right? So even if you have the day off, make sure you get up early. It's the Rivertown Country Club going on next Monday, 8 a.m. It goes on sale at charlestonsportsradio.com. Great deal. Get yourself a foursome for just $98.99, I think it is. 98.9, as you listen here on 98.9. ESPN Radio. So foursomes go on sale next Monday, 8 a.m., Rivertown Country Club. Already sold out this week. All 3 weeks have sold out before we even get on the air. So you got about 20 minutes before you run out of your opportunity. So remember, next Monday, 8 a.m., head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com and get your foursome for the Rivertown Country Club. Speaking of golf, we've been talking about it throughout this afternoon. We were covering it all week long. The PGA Championship at the Ocean Course on Kiawah, which was won yesterday by Phil Mickelson with his historic victory, winning at 50 years old, the oldest golfer to ever win a major. Here was Phil afterwards talking with the media. This is from Phil's press conference yesterday. A little bit of a long clip. This is just the first portion of the press conference yesterday, but Mickelson, after his historic win, talking about it over on Kiawah Island yesterday.
It's been an incredible day, and I have not let myself kind of think about the results until now. Now that it's over, I've tried to stay more in the present and the shot at hand, not jump ahead and race. I've tried to really shut my mind to a lot of stuff that was going on around. Like I wasn't watching TV, I wasn't getting on my phone. I was just trying to quiet things down because I'll get my thoughts racing, and I really just tried to stay calm and. I believed for a long time that I could play at this level again. I didn't see why I couldn't, but I wasn't executing the way I believed I could. And with the help of a lot of people, my wife especially, but Andrew Getson and my brother Tim and Steve Loy, I've been able to make progress and then have this week. So it's very exciting because I've had a few breakthroughs on being able to stay more present, be able to stay more focused, and physically I'm striking it and playing as well as I ever have, but I haven't been able to see that clear picture. So although I believed it until I actually did it, there was a lot of doubt, I'm sure.
All right, let's go to Bob on four.
Phil, over the last several years, as the age crept up, you never really let that get in the way. You always downplayed it. Actually try to dismiss it probably. How did you do that? I mean, certainly you know the history, that doesn't work out as much at this point. What did you do?
Worked harder is the deal. I just had to work harder physically to be able to practice as long as I wanted to, and I've had to work a lot harder to be able to maintain focus throughout a round. That's been the biggest challenge of late. And my desire to play is the same. Like I've never been driven by exterior things. I've always been, you know, intrinsically motivated because I love to compete. I love playing the game. I love having opportunities to play against the best at the highest level. And so that's what drives me. And I think that's what has the belief that I could still do it inspired me to work harder. And I just didn't see why it couldn't be done. It just took a little bit more effort.
Mickelson talking after his win yesterday to the media. He's set to turn 51 in just a couple weeks. I've always felt like Phil Mickelson seems older than he actually is. I know 50 is old in the sports world. It's not really old in real life. You still got plenty of life ahead of you. But in when we talk about athletes, if you're a 50-year-old athlete, even in golf, right, that's old. But 50, when I look at Mickelson, to me, he's always looked much older. Now, by the time the U.S. Open rolls around in about 3 weeks, he will have just turned 51. And could that be? What a remarkable story that would be. That he's never, that's the one he's never won. He's finished second six times. He's won the Masters. He's won the PGA Championship. He's won the Open Championship. Never the U.S. Open. Now, I think it would be fool's gold to expect this to become the norm out of Mickelson. I think yesterday was more of a one-off for the 50-year-old. He played great, tough course. Some other guys faltered. Not to take anything away from Phil, he was excellent all weekend long. But I don't think the expectation should now be that, oh, he's back. Here comes Lefty. He's going to be the favorite in a lot of these events. I think yesterday was more of a one-off. But for as great as yesterday and this week was, imagine if he wins the U.S. Open finally and does it at 51 and wins back-to-back majors in his 50s. Now that would be remarkable. Coming up, which coach would you prefer to have leading your football team in the SEC? There was a debate over the past couple of days. I guess apparently I'm in the minority. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
You give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. Yeah. If you did it then, then you probably can. Talking out your neck, saying you're a Christian. A Muslim sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you're thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just a minimum.
Coming up, which coach would you prefer to have in the SEC? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Now, this was a great song from back in the day. And then Lauryn Hill just kind of disappeared, right, for a while. She went off the map.
I mean, she had to. That's what happens when you have tax evasion.
Oh, is that what happened? Oh, well, in that case.
I mean, she had a series of concerts where she was constantly lady. I think she had a concert where she was supposed to play here.
Really?
And
she blew it off?
She was like an hour and a half late, and when she got a bad response from the crowd, I think it was, she was like, y'all paid to see me. As if, like, we're not going anywhere. Right. We're on her time schedule, and I think a lot of people left.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, forget that ego. Yeah.
Probably one of the greatest albums ever made. I mean, that's one of the rare albums I can listen from start to finish and enjoy all of it. Yeah.
I always talk about that. We've had that conversation multiple times on the show, but the perfect album, what album you could put on and not have to change a song?
John Legend's first album is another one.
We've talked about John Legend on the show. Yes, his early work was very good. I liked his early stuff. Yeah, that first album, the first couple, I'd have to go back and look at the specific ones, what songs were on which. But yes, he had his early stuff was very good. My perfect albums, I've always said, I'm sure will be different from anything like Lauryn Hill or John Legend. But Rolling Stones, Voodoo Lounge, Dave Matthews Band, Away from the World, Tom Petty's Wildflowers, and Red Hot Chili Peppers, Stadium Arcadium, which was a double album. And those were albums that I could put on and not have to get up. Don't have to change them at all. So that was always my list. I'm sure I could come up with some others as well, but those are the four that I always think of. Hey, a debate broke out over the past week about who you would rather have. We know Nick Saban is the best coach in the SEC. You could debate about the next couple, but who would you rather have between two of the top coaches in the SEC? Dan Mullen or Kirby Smart? And this will then lead into the follow-up about best coaches in the SEC. But friend of the show, Josh Pate, on his Late Kick podcast was talking about this because this became a big debate. And so Josh Pate was touching on this subject. And here is what Josh Pate had to say in regards to Dan Mullen, coach of Florida, versus Kirby Smart, coach of Georgia.
I think it would become pretty obvious pretty quick. There is a more universally desirable candidate amongst these two, and I think it'd be Kirby Smart. I would fall on the Kirby Smart side here, and I'm going to tell you exactly why. I got about two or three truths that I could come up with off the top of my head. Truth number one, if we tie all the fan bases back in, is there are some Florida fans, I don't know what the percentage is, but there are some Florida fans who would trade Dan Mullen for Kirby Smart. There ain't a Georgia fan walking the planet who would trade Smart for Mullen. Those two truths I'm pretty sure about. Truth number three is I think if we took a purely national, what we would call an agnostic poll, which means we don't have believers of either program in here, and we just take it of Wisconsin fan or Oklahoma fan, I tell you, Paul Chryst is gone today. Lincoln Riley's gone today. You can have one of them to lead the Badgers or the Sooners. Who you taking? I think we'd probably have about a 75-25 Kirby Smart, Dan Mullen clip. And it's very simple.
That was Josh Pate talking about the Mullen versus Smart debate. I disagree. I prefer Dan Mullen. And I would disagree for a few reasons. Now, according to Josh in that clip, he made it seem pretty obvious, right, that most people would go with Kirby Smart. So I guess I'm in the minority on this. But I would go with Dan Mullen, and I really wouldn't hesitate for a few different reasons. Number one, you're talking offensive coach versus defensive coach. Look at the top programs in college football. Ohio State, led by an offensive coach. Oklahoma, led by an offensive coach. Clemson, Dabo's more like a CEO, but he did come from the offensive side of the football. And Alabama, the number one program, sure, they're led by Nick Saban, a defensive coach, but we know Alabama has been driven more by their offense of late. When Texas wants to get back into the fold, who do they hire? An offensive coach. When Ole Miss or Mississippi State want to compete in the SEC, they go offense. The Gamecocks just went offense this offseason with Shane Beamer, whose father, I know, father, he was coaching tight ends. His father wasn't necessarily an offensive guru per se, but he was working on the offensive side of the football. In fact, five of the top seven teams in college football last year were led by offensive coaches based off of the final rankings. The sport is moving in that direction, and so I'd rather keep up with the changes and have the offensive coach instead of the defensive coach. Because you know what happens with the defensive coach is that they need to nail the offensive coordinator. So you need to hit on your hire of getting the right guy in the job, and then he needs to nail his hire of getting the right offensive coordinator. It's why Georgia has had three offensive coordinators the last 3 years. Meanwhile, for Florida, the offensive coordinators can come and go. It's still Dan Mullen's offense, and it leads to more stability. It leads to the offense always being there. Guys are familiar with the playbook. I lean more offense than defense. If you go defense, you have to then nail your offensive coordinator hire. If you go offense, you can nail both hires in one because he's also your offensive coordinator, even if he doesn't hold that title, even if you hire an actual offensive coordinator. Dan Mullen, it's his offense. He's calling the plays. It doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator could change every year. It doesn't make a difference. It's still Mullen's offense. Whereas for Georgia, they've been trying to figure out this offensive thing for years. They hope they have the right guy in place. They're finally bringing back an offensive coordinator for a second straight year. And for Dan Mullen, look at the job he's done. He developed Dak Prescott. He developed Kyle Trask. Trask went 8 years between starts. He was just drafted in the second round. He developed Kyle Pitts, who people are saying is going to be one of the greatest tight ends we've ever seen. He just put Tony in the first round, who went to Florida as a high school quarterback. He was drafted in the first round as a wide receiver. Dan Mullen has developed 14 first-round draft picks in his coaching career as a head coach in the SEC. 14 in the first round in fewer than 14 years, and the majority of them on offense. He knows offense. I will take that. Nowadays, because it's all about offense. Kirby Smart may be the best defensive coach in the country, and I don't think he is. But even if he were, I would rather take the better offensive coach than the better defensive coach because that's the direction the sport has moved. Number two, Dan Mullen has done it at multiple places already. Kirby Smart has only coached at Georgia as a head coach. Dan Mullen took over a Mississippi State program that hadn't been ranked a single week, not 1 week out of the year. They had not been ranked a single week for 9 seasons. It had been almost a decade since Mississippi State was last ranked. And by year two of Dan Mullen, he had them in the top 15. He eventually got them to number one in the country. First time the program was ever ranked in the top five. Dan Mullen did that. And since he left, that program has been under 500 without him. In fact, Dan Mullen has the best winning percentage in program history at Mississippi State. And number three, we know what Dan Mullen is capable of. Do we truly know what Kirby Smart is capable of? And what I mean by this is that Dan Mullen has turned around two programs. He turned around Mississippi State and Florida. He took over a Florida program that was 4-7 the year before he got there. Florida finished the year ranked twice in the previous 8 years. Of the previous 8 years before Dan Mullen, only two out of the 8 times did they finish that season in the top 25. Remember, when Dan Mullen got there, we were coming off of Will Muschamp into Jim McElwain. It was the worst era, we could say error as well in this case, but it was the worst era for Florida football since the late 70s. And Dan Mullen had them ranked in the top seven his first 2 years. First year on the job, they became a top seven team in the country. Now, Florida's a great program. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't taking over Vanderbilt. Right, Florida is a great program. It's got the brand. It's got a great home field advantage. There's plenty of talent in that state. You don't have to get on a plane to recruit your entire team. But he took over a program that, again, was at its worst point in about 40 years. And he turned them around immediately. Meanwhile, Kirby Smart, and maybe this is unfair to hold against him because, look, he can't pick his predecessor, but he took over a program that won 10 games the previous two seasons before he got there. I mean, they were ranked sixth in the country in Mark Richt's final season. So he was taking over already a ready-made program. Whereas Dan Mullen, yeah, it's Florida. It's not Vanderbilt. It's not even the Gamecocks, right? Shane Beamer has to build South Carolina up more than Dan Mullen had to when he arrived in Gainesville. But Florida was down at the time, and he turned them around immediately. Kirby Smart just took over a good program and kept them good. I mean, look at Mark Richt. His career winning percentage at Georgia was 74%. He won 74% of his games. Kirby Smart has won 78%. So sure, he's improved, but by 4%, right? By less, not even a win a season. So yes, he's done a better job than Mark Richt before him, but it's not like he took over some sort of, you know, trash program and it's like, wow, look at the job. He's just kept them at that pace. He's elevated them a little bit. You know, Mark Richt, towards the end of his career, wasn't the same coach he was early on. I get all that. But Georgia had won double-digit games the previous two seasons. They were ranked in the top 10 the last year of Mark Richt, and then Kirby Smart took over. Dan Mullen, meanwhile, I think he's done a better job building something in multiple places. When you look at what they're working with, when you look at the resources, the job that they have on their plate, I think Dan Mullen has done the better job. Now, he certainly needs to do a better job winning bigger games, Dan Mullen does. His team fell apart. They fizzled against LSU this past year. That was a brutal loss. We all remember the cornerback throwing the shoe, right? That's the issue with Dan Mullen, kind of a lack of discipline. Dan Mullen shows up at the press conference in a Darth Vader costume. He's out at midfield when the teams are fighting. Those are the concerns with Dan Mullen. Then when you want to talk about a leader, there's some concerns there. Right? He's all about wearing the Jordans. His wife's kissing the players off the team. He just has a different style than your Nick Sabans or your Kirby Smarts leading a team. And that can lead them to be a little vulnerable in big spots where they're not disciplined or they're not ready for the big stage. Dan Mullen needs to do a better job in big games. His record isn't great against ranked teams. Now, granted, a lot of that was playing at a disadvantage with Mississippi State. He's been far better against ranked teams with Florida when he has comparable talent. But he needs to do a better job in the big games. He needs to do a better job taking recruiting seriously. He does a good job in recruiting. He does a great job developing these guys. Kyle Trask, Kyle Pitts, right? Tony, this year alone in this draft class, Dak Prescott. He does a great job at developing talent. I think he could do an even better job in recruiting. I think he thought he was on his way out of Florida and almost hasn't taken recruiting all that seriously the last 18 months. Because it almost felt like he felt he was on the way to a better job. But long story short, with all that said, I would take Dan Mullen, and I wouldn't think twice about it. If I had an opening, if I was South Carolina, and you could say, hey, you could take any coach in the country. Obviously, you know, Nick Saban, Dabo, they'd be at the top of the list. But after you get past the top guys, and you get down to your Kirby Smarts, Dan Mullen, Dan Mullen, sure, please. Come run the Gamecocks. I would pick him over Kirby. And I know the Gamecocks, right, were very interested in Kirby Smart a few years ago. I'd rather have Dan Mullen. And if I was ranking the top coaches in the SEC, Saban is still clearly number one. There's no debate there. But then I think you can start debating with number two. And I would put Jimbo Fisher still number two because much like the things I said for Dan Mullen, Jimbo has done it at multiple stops. He's done it quickly. And the big thing was that he won a national championship with Florida State, which is the difference between both Kirby and Dan Mullen. So I put Jimbo Fisher at number two, but I was hesitant. I was even considering Dan Mullen number two. But I'll slot Mullen at number three. And those, I believe, are the top coaches in the SEC. Saban is still clearly number one. I will put Jimbo Fisher at number two. And I think Dan Mullen's at number three. And I would even say those coaches are both underrated, Jimbo Fisher and Dan Mullen. I think because they're not the most popular guys. If you're not a Florida fan, you probably don't like Dan Mullen. He's obnoxious. He's brash. He plays the victim card a lot, right? Blames the referees, blames the crowd, this, that. He doesn't really take responsibility. He can be a little childish. You know, same with Jimbo Fisher, same idea, the way he finished at Florida State and the big contract at Texas A&M, and he can be very confident, let's say, right? Cocky. But when you look at what they've done, I think they are the top coaches in the SEC right behind Nick Saban. All right, we have to wrap up your Monday afternoon here before we go at the top of the hour. We'll wrap things up when we come back. Get you ready for the rest of your afternoon. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. Baby, we can make it if we're heart to heart. And we can build this thing together.
wrapping up your Monday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Plus, you can also take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com through your smart speaker or through the free TuneIn Radio app. Tomorrow on the show, we'll only be with you until about 1:15 leading into Gamecock baseball. We'll still have our Tuesday Top 10 tomorrow. Which coaches in college football have the most to prove this year? And also, for the Carolina Panthers, this is a very important offseason for them, and we'll get more into that tomorrow on the show. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500. Before we go, let's go to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, man, on this blazing hot, hot Monday, Luke. When I got up this morning, I heard First Take, and I heard Stephen A. at the E-Crow about Tobias Harris scoring 30 points in the first half and a career-high 37 points in a win over the Washington Wizards. I gloated.
Yeah, he played great. You know, best game of his playoff career, and that's what the Sixers need. If the Sixers want to make a championship run outside of Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, they need that third option to step up, and Tobias certainly did over the weekend, helping them beat the Wizards.
Yeah, this kid went through the ringer last night when when he was in the dome down there in Orlando. People were putting him down. He came back and fought and trained over the short break and came back with fire last night. So he's definitely an all-star next year, and I'm proud. Proud uncle of him. So go ahead, nephew. Take it to the hole.
That's right.
Thanks, man.
Hey, appreciate it, Ricardo. Taking the victory lap today for his nephew, Tobias Harris. I don't blame you. Tobias played great. 37 points in 37 minutes. And that's, as I said earlier, if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. I gave my main takeaway from each of the opening games of the NBA postseason over the weekend. And that was my main takeaway from what I saw with the Sixers and the Wizards. I think the Wizards can make it tough on Philadelphia. Now, teams with losing records have lost 30 straight playoff series. We haven't seen a team go into the playoffs under 500 and actually advance. The Wizards are under 500. They're not going to beat Philadelphia. They may steal a game, maybe two. I think they're going to make it tough on Philadelphia. Like, that was a tough game yesterday. They won by 7, but it was a grinded out, play to the last possession type of deal for Philadelphia. Washington will make it tough. They had some COVID issues this year. I mean, you got Westbrook and Bradley Beal. They're going to play hard. They're going to give you effort. And the Sixers will win the series, but it won't be easy. But if they want to win a championship, my main takeaway from this game was the performance from Tobias Harris. And Ben Simmons, look, he did a lot yesterday. I mean, 15 assists. He only scored 6 points, only took 9 shots. He'll do a little bit of everything other than just score for you. Joel Embiid is more of the scorer. But you need that third option, especially when you want to talk about the Brooklyn Nets with their three weapons. And for Philadelphia, it's going to be too hard to require 37 points a night from Tobias. But if he just plays as well as he did throughout this season, or if he steps it up a little bit from the regular season, the Sixers are in a good position with their big three and how well they play at home. And they'll get home court against Brooklyn. I still think the Nets are going to win the East and win the championship. But if the Sixers want to compete, I think that's been a big difference for them in years past, is that you have relied solely on Embiid and Simmons, and they haven't played well enough in the postseason. Now, if you have a third option with Tobias, that helps you. Much like the Bucks, they rely so much on Giannis. Giannis is not the type of guy that is going to win a game for you at the very end, especially in the postseason. That's why they went out and they got Jrue Holiday and gave him a bunch of money. And Chris Middleton was the one that made the shot yesterday. I think Middleton consistently needs to play better in the postseason. This weekend was a good start for him, and he hit the buzzer beater. He was the hero, and he's got 3 of those in his playoff career. But same idea with the Bucks, much like the Sixers. You know Giannis is going to do his typical part, but you can't really rely on him to put the team on his back at the end of the game, so you need other players to step up. There have been very few champions in NBA history that were led by one star who didn't have much help around them. And that's where the Bucks and the Sixers have faltered, that they need more help around their stars, and they believe they have it this year. We'll see. We'll be with you tomorrow for a much shorter version, only till about 1:15, getting ready for Gamecock baseball. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes, for now we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow for a shortened version of the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.